Okay, this is an oral history interview of Trevor McIntyre. We're at the University of Pretoria, and it's the 16th of March, 2010. Thank you.
Hi.
Okay. Now, the first question, obviously, is how did you get to Marion? How did it go? How did it come?
How did I get involved?
Yes.
Well, I saw, initially I was nearing the end of my master's at I was doing it at Wits, working on something completely different as well. I was working on lizards. Working on mining contaminant pollution effects on a lizard population in the Free State. And so I was nearing the end of my master's and didn't really know what I was going to do afterwards. And I saw an ad actually for a different position in the team, for Pradeel's job, the field assistant on the disturbance project. And it sort of looked like something I would be interested in doing, sort of a year contract, and so I applied for that, and then I got a phone call from Martin quite a while after that. I think he pretty much sort of conned me into it a little bit, because he said I was coming for an interview for what I had applied for. So I came to Pretoria and had the interview, and but in the interview he kept asking me if I'd be willing to do other things, you know, sort of like working on seals. And So, the next thing I knew, I was sort of employed as a sealer. I was keen, it sounded fun, and that's pretty much how I got involved.
Do you think they didn't get other applications, or they just saw your application might be very worthwhile to the sealing project?
I don't really know. I've never actually I've never really asked too much, to be honest. I do think a few years ago, the program has changed quite a bit, in the sense that I think we get a lot more, many more applications at the moment and the last few years than we did previously. It's sort of,
so
the profile has gone up a little bit, I think. It would be nice to think that it was because my CV stood up, but, you know, it very likely is just because they were short on people and they needed someone. So.
Have you heard of Marion Island before you applied?
I'd heard of it, but knew very little actually about it. I think what most people knew, you know, sort of South Antarctic Island, and that there was a weather station.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. That's pretty much what you sort of know.
A weather station,
and probably some animals, you know, but that very little actually.
So did you like the idea of spending a year in isolation? Did you know it would be isolated?
Yes, I did.
I was talking about how much did you know about Marion Island. Have you spoken to any of the previous team members before you applied or went?
Not before I applied, no. The application was sort of literally just based on the advertisement I saw. Before I went, I obviously spoke to some of the previous sealers who were in this department here. I can't recall that I actually spoke to anyone else other than, it was literally sort of Martin, my boss, Nico, who had been before, and Greg Hofmeyer, who was still very involved with the project then. Those were sort of the only people who had actually been before.
What kind of things would they tell you?
They were generally, I mean, most of it was sort of work-based, I suppose, because they were all involved with the program, so it was definitely sort of running through what my responsibilities would be on the island, and a little bit about sort of the environment, you know. Obviously everyone talks always about the weather, what you need to be prepared for in terms of cold and wet and everything else. I distinctly remember getting a very excited sort of feeling from both Nico and Greg whenever they spoke about the island.
Lit up.
Exactly, they completely lit up, and it was that enthusiasm was very sort of and reassuring in a sense, because you feel like, wow, you know, well, it's got to be a cool place if that's what they feel like afterwards.
In your preparation for going down to the island, what was that like? What did you do to prepare?
Not that much, to be honest. I think I went into it fairly blindly. I think if I just say compared to like the new teams and, you know, sort of all the information we're trying to give them about things that they need to take along and whatever, we didn't really happen much in my year. I don't know if it happened before. I don't think it really did. So I mean, we sort of got specific things that we knew during team training. We, you know, when you sort of meet up with your team members, we were fortunate and we had one or two people who had been before, and they were sort of able to give us a bit of a better idea of extra things you need and so on. But those are all very last minute things, literally sort of a week before you go.
Yeah.
You sort of, but in terms of other preparations, yeah, not too much. I was told to try and pick up some weight before I go. So I try to eat a lot, and that was it, really.
Yeah, were you told about the physical nature of the work?
Yes, yeah. I mean, that was definitely sort of impressed straight away that it's physically very, very demanding.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. Team training, what did that involve?
Quite a lot of varied things. We did all the sort of basic courses that they still do now. I mean, the locations only changed now, but we essentially did the sort of first aid course.
Mm.
We did a firefighting course and a cooking class, which was not very helpful.
Why not?
Well, it was sort of it was very strange in that you know everyone sort of just got to make one little thing themselves, and you know, I don't know, I just didn't feel like it was ultimately that, you know, I mean, yeah, at least, I suppose for someone who's maybe never ever touched anything in the kitchen, maybe it would be useful, but most people, I think, at least, have a basic idea of, you know.
So have you cooked for yourself before?
Yeah, I mean, I lived by myself for a few years before then, so, yeah. But yeah, other than that, we had a sort of a weekend away that we went, that was sort of organized on the side, I think, by a team leader at the time. We sort of did a hiking trip and sort of an overnight camping trip. We just all got to know each other a bit better. I'm trying to remember what else we sort of did in the... This was all Pretoria based still. So they moved down to Cape Town a few years ago. The whole sort of operation, but it was back then. It was here. Yeah, we sort of did a trip to the library to take out. You get to take out all the books you want from the National Library, which
that's
is.
Nice. Did you have to return them?
Yeah. So you take them out, and you know, they all go in one big container to the island, and then you have to give it back at the end of the year, and it comes back.
What kinds of books did you choose?
I don't even really remember. There wasn't a very big selection. I remember being very disappointed with our National Library.
Okay.
It wasn't, you know, it was just sort of very old books in general, and nothing. I mean,
not a lot of fiction.
There must have been. I personally prefer reading more sort of non-fiction books, and I remember sort of thinking, well, you know, there's not that much here, and I definitely took a few books. I can't remember the title of a single one. There was. Don't know.
No.
Yeah.
How long before you went did you go to Cape Town?
We arrived in Cape Town about a week before we left. So we had. We had very. The sort of structure was we had the 2 weeks of team training in Pretoria, and then we had about a week off before we went to Cape Town, and then we had, it was a week or just less than a week, sort of a few days that we were in Cape Town, during which we essentially just got our gear and sort of packed everything finally, and it was supposed to be sort of part of team training, but there wasn't really any other specific activities. Yeah.
And is it this time that you got the new leader?
Yes, yeah. So once we arrived in Cape Town, I believe the story goes, I'm not sure if it, this was, I think Shorty, and he will be able to fill you in more. I think he was on standby prior to it already. They had sort of informed him that he may have to go, in fact, as a replacement for one of the other weather services persons, for Peter Scher, who was in our team. They weren't confident that he was going to actually make it. He made it, but the team needed it, so it was sort of...
So they kind of a bit of a surprise to you all?
Oh yeah, we, it was a very big surprise. We definitely didn't have an idea. Patu, for instance, it was the first time he was in a plane, and Heine was supposed to meet him at the airport in Cape Town and pick him up. And
who was this on the plane?
Patu, my fellow sealer. He had never, literally, grown up in Venda, been around here all his life. First time in a plane, goes to Cape Town, and the guy who's supposed to pick him up disappeared, you know. So I think it was a big surprise for everyone.
How did that affect team dynamics, you think?
I think, in a way, at the time, I mean, everything's very positive, I think, for most teams at that point, because everyone's excited about the year, and it was a little bit scary, but in terms of team dynamics, I don't think it sort of really changed anything. I think everyone sort of said, well, you know, that's how it's going to be, and it, in fact, it became almost a slightly bonding thing, because you sort of, everyone, you know, it's a sort of a discussion point, you know, well, everyone's wondering what happened to him, yeah, he's not here, but, you know, sort of, and of course everyone comes up with their own theories about what's happened, and, you know, but I don't think it really changed anything in terms of the team dynamics, no.
And then Nishar just fell in the job.
Yeah, he was sort of officially appointed team leader about a day or two before he left,
Who worked with this? Was it Henry?
So Henry was involved right from the start. Okay. You know, once we realized Heine's not there.
And who was your DCO or officer in charge?
DCO. Franz Hoffmann, is it? I think Franz. Okay. I think he's. I'm not. I don't think he's still involved with Senap. If I'm. I believe he. Although someone told me the other day that he's. Sort of, he wants to get involved again or something. I can't remember what the. I heard. It's very efficient, very, very well organized person, I think so. I can't remember. France is his first name.
So then you get on the ship. Was it Agalis?
Yes, yeah.
Have you met the captain?
I don't remember specifically meeting the captain. I mean, I guess we must have, because normally there's sort of a meeting in the first day or two with everyone in the lounge, and it must have been the captain who. Sort of spoke to everyone, but
And how was the journey down to the Roaring Forties?
It was surprisingly okay. I think we were fortunate on that trip that we had good weather all the way. But you know, you sort of hear all the rumors about the ship's going to be so bad and you're going to get so sick, and then you're expecting Martin to come with a hamburger in your face and sort of rub it in. And none of that actually happened. You know, it was actually fine. I mean, I sort of you feel a bit queasy sort of the second day, but it wasn't. Yeah, that was okay, so at least on that trip.
You remember what happened on the way back? Was that...
That was definitely a bit worse. I felt a little bit more more queasy on the way back than going there. And I suppose it's because you tend to start off in rougher water and you haven't been on anything that's moving for quite a while.
That's so true. Yeah. Did you stand on the deck and watch Table Mountain when you left?
Yeah, we were all immediately sort of going up to the monkey deck and hanging around there for most of the way. Well, most of that first day. Yeah.
How did it feel to see leaving Table Mountain on the horizon?
It was. I can't really remember any specific sort of. I think for me it was exciting. It was just sort of the sort of excitement of going somewhere where I didn't really. I had some sort of expectations. I guess I had some sort of picture in my mind, but no.
Definite.
Yeah, I couldn't really picture it, and so it was sort of this excitement. I guess a little bit of, it's a little bit scary, but it was definitely just more excitement than anything else. I guess I was, compared to other people who would have family members or girlfriends or boyfriends, who definitely had sort of the sadness part involved. I didn't have any family members there, at least, so it was it was fine. You know, you're on your way, and
Was it a teary-eyed?
No.
Then you arrived at the island. What was your first impressions?
It was colder than I thought it would be. I knew it was going to be cold, but it was just a little bit, that sort of nip in the air when you sort of on the ship still, you're not even on the island yet, and this is what it feels like. And this is what it's going to be like all the time. You know, that was a little intimidating. Seeing the island from the ship, you don't. I think it looked, not that difficult or not that hard terrain to work on. And, I thought, that's fine. You know, we'll see when we get there. But obviously, once you're there, it's a slightly different story.
Did any complaints come construction crew go down with you?
There would have, yeah, there was. We didn't have a very big component during the takeover, as far as I can recall. We had a construction voyage later in the year, that they arrived from August to November.
The offloading process, how does that work on Marin?
Well, essentially, we normally, well, you don't really get most of your things at the start, but they start the sort of personal gear. Mm-hmm. So first people get flown off, and then they start flights, depending on whether just taking off containers one by one. And then, I mean, we were very, I don't know if it's necessarily every year like that. I think most years the expectation is for the team to really be helping a lot with getting all the gear, especially sort of kitchen things. And yeah, we definitely had a few days where that's pretty much all you did was just offloading things, making big lines, passing along packages, yeah.
So the helideck was finished by then?
Yeah,
meeting the old team, what was that like?
It was a bit strange in a sense. I didn't really have a very clear idea. There was only one sealer left from the year before, because that was Justice and Hendrik were the two sealers, and Hendrik was sent back early. So, you know, there was only the one guy there, and it was fine. I mean, there was no... The team, it was a bit strange, but when you land, you're a little bit disorientated. I remember sort of feeling a little bit disorientated when we sort of got out the helicopter, and some of the old team members were there and sort of pointing us, you have to go down there, but you don't really, you know, you see a catwalk going down there, but you sort of follow it down, but you don't know where the entrance is to the building, you don't know where anything is, and it's sort of, it's all brand new, and you sort of, you know.
It's like these containers.
Exactly, yeah, so it was definitely a little bit disorientating initially, but then obviously once you're inside.
And then the sealer that was left during takeover, he took you out of it and trained you.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was sort of his main responsibility was to sort of show us around, and I suppose to humble us a little bit more, because they're all a lot fitter than you are.
Oh, okay. So can you remember your first encounter with a first seal pup or first seal?
I distinctly remember the first sort of day that we did an elephant seal census going north, where you do encounter the first seals and things on the way. And I remember sort of thinking, well, the fur seals sounded a lot like little sheep, but sheep with teeth, you know, that you sort of have to just stay out of their way a little bit, and they just seemed to be all over the place. And I didn't know how we were going to be able to, throughout the year, avoid stepping on them, because there were some beaches where you sort of walk along, and what you really think is a rock turns out to be a seal the next thing, you know, and, you know, so... Yeah, it was a bit intimidating, just the numbers of seals, and obviously just the general terrain. I mean, we sort of did half a census, really, what you would normally do, and I was dead tired. That was that first day of actual work was intimidating enough to sort of make me doubt about whether I wanted to stay for the year. Mm-hmm. I was really sort of, and I think most sealers go to that, where they think, I'm not going to be able to do this. This is sort of regretting what I did.
So, a day in the life of a sealer, once you got into your routine, what does a sealer do?
A lot of walking. That's the start of it. Well, I mean, the main program is based on this mark reciting program, which I'm sure Nico and Martin would have told you a lot about. So a lot of your work is checking seals for tags. That's sort of the basis of it. You're checking the set beaches. Check once a week or once every 10 days, and you go up to every single animal and see if it's got a tag. If it doesn't, then you carry on. So that's sort of the bulk of what you do, and then, you know, there's all those other bits and bobs that fit in. But I mean, sort of the average day, depending on the time of year, during the quieter times of year, and sort of in winter, we would normally, you'd be able to sort of get up at fairly leisurely times. Not have too much worry, and you'd go, depending on again time of week. If you had a quiet day, you'd only have to do attendance pattern work around base. So you'd go up to Van der Boeghardt, check out the fur seals, what's happening, come back in the morning, you go out later again in the afternoon, do the same thing. And the rest of the time you can do your lab-based work, catch up on data entries and so on. And then you have your normal censuses where you go, so the first of the elephant seal censuses, which at the start take you a bit longer than it normally does, but you'd either go north or south, you spend the night in Kildalki, following all the beaches, checking all the seals, spend a night in Kildalki, go across to Water Tunnel, and spend a night in Water Tunnel, day in Greyhead in Water Tunnel, and then come back, and then you go up to Repetto. So it normally takes about 3 days, week, and then you've got a few days where you just do attendance patterns, and then you have a day where you go up to Cape Davis and weigh a lot of first seal pups, and then you come back, and you know, it's very varied, so it's a bit difficult to just come up with a typical day. But a typical day involves, generally, the thing you do the most is checking tags, and then all the extra stuff.
Apart from walking, what's the physical nature of the job?
The walking and the terrain, getting up and down beaches is the main thing. Other physical things include when you're doing a lot of weighing. So the first seal pups is not too much of a hassle, they tend to be quite light, but when you have to weigh 100 at a time, it does get to you eventually. Everything starts hurting after a while. During the elephant seal breeding season, we have to weigh elephant seal pups, which are weaners, which are quite heavy. So they're weighing about 120 kilograms on average. And so those are physically a really hard thing to lift.
How do you get to the pups with them? Mothers and the harems around?
Well, we only weigh weaners. Essentially what happens is in our harem, as soon as a pup weans, the female often still sticks around in the harem, but the pups essentially get kicked out.
Okay.
And so they're a little bit separate and you can get to them. You have to be careful still of the adults, but you can normally get to them without too much of a hassle.
Have you been bitten by a seal?
I was lucky. I got only minor first seal pup bites. Lots of those, and that's, you know, that sort of, everyone gets those all the time. Yeah, but they really are. I mean, I don't think I've really even got a proper scar. I've got like a little scar on my arm, which is, you know, I've got nothing to really show for it.
Would you say you have a favourite seal to work with?
Sure. It's a toss-up between Antarctic fur seal pups. When you're doing attendance patterns, they're very curious animals, and when you, the nice thing is sort of when you're doing attendance patterns, you sort of get to hang around for quite a while, sort of in the colony, just checking. And there's often you get these young animals, not even pups, sort of young adults who just come out and check you out, and they're curious. And they're not really aggressive. You can literally, if you just sit down, often you get one or two that come right up to you and sniff, and they even try and sort of check you with their teeth. They sort of nibble a little bit to see what your reaction is, but there's no aggression there. So it's between them and elephant seal pups as well. I mean, they just, the weaners, the elephant seal weaners are, they're just these little round balls of fat, and especially on cold days, you can quite often, if they're sleeping and they don't know it's you, and you can give them a bit of a rub on their back and they roll them, and they quite like it, and you can stick your hand in the flippers and it's quite nice and warm there. So they, I mean, you know, they're very just sort of charismatic. Those are the sort of charismatic animals to you, in terms of their temperament.
Do you have any favourite places on Marin?
Sure. Probably the western side of the island. I mean, between Swartkop and Mixpickle. I guess for most people that's sort of a bit of a favourite. Partially, I guess, just because you don't get there as much. I mean, most of our work, at least in our year, was all centred around the east coast. So you're working between Greyhead and Cape Davis all the time, you're up and down. And then when you do get to, I mean, we had monthly round islands where we had to do checks on the other side. And those are sort of, you know, it's just fantastic time because, well, one, there isn't that many seals or elephant seals on that side, so you don't have that much work to do, so you can get a bit more of a holiday feel out of it.
Okay,
I suppose Swartkop is fantastic. That's probably, if I had to rate places, that would be number one.
Did you get to know the birds as well?
Yeah. We got to help out a little bit with the birders and their work on our year. I guess if you're there, you get to know at least the names. You get to identify everything. And we got to help with some of the penguin.
Did the birders sometimes help you?
Not very often, no. They try, but they I think in Ireland they got freaked out a little bit by the seals. The one birder, Ingrid, got a bit of a bite. She got a bigger seal bite than any other sealers in the area. Yeah, I mean, they did help when, like, if we went pupwaying occasionally, they would come along and help with the fur seal pups. Yeah.
Anybody else help? Midgutsies, maybe?
We did get some help from the diesel mech, Jan and Anke, the medic, a married couple. Especially, things get very busy in the breeding season when we're weighing elephant seal weaners, because the idea is to weigh them on the day that they wean. So you're not necessarily there for that. Well, it's a stretch from Ship's Cove to Archway that we weigh on. And you're not necessarily there every day to check, because you've got to work on the other side of the island as well. So we got them to do walkouts, and at least if they are weaners, that they mark them and we know which day they're weaned. So they helped a bit with that, and we got a little bit of help from, remember Pitesha, the one, Metkasi also helped once or twice with the weighing.
So you work mostly around the coast. Did you get a chance to go inland?
Yeah, not often, but I think I got to spend 2 nights in Cathedral in the during the year, and sort of did one or two day trips, sort of shortcuts through.
How does the inland differ from the coast?
It's completely different. It's like a different world there. It's very quiet. If depending on the weather on the day, I mean, normally you'd only really go up if on good weather days anyway, if you have a choice at least. And so those are normally the days that I was there. And what struck me then was just how quiet it is. You don't have animal life around. I mean, you get the odd squirrel that would sort of venture all the way up, but generally you just don't see anything, you don't hear anything else. If anything, you only hear the wind, and that's it. Some on the coast, you obviously all like.
How much did you learn on Marina?
It depends about what. I mean, I think you learn a lot about yourself. Mm-hmm. You learn a lot about the animals you work on. You learn a lot about the science behind what you're doing as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all in all, I feel like I've learned stacks. I mean,
how often do you work with other disciplines? Have you learned anything about other disciplines there?
Do you mean like just the other natural sciences, or with different
together, diesel mechanics, medicals?
I guess you do learn a little bit about sort of how the weather services and things work, just because you're so interested in it as well, because it affects you. You're sort of immediately aware of it all the time, so you go and ask them a lot of questions and things. And I mean, we, like I said, we helped them with the birders a bit, so you do get into contact with that. Occasionally, we helped a little bit with what Ethel and Asanda was doing with the Khocha things, not that much. So to a certain extent, definitely not a lot. I mean, I don't think, I definitely didn't learn much about the generators. I still wouldn't be able to fix one
know where one is.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's some things that you obviously need to learn, just how to operate, like the radios and the heads and things, which, you know, it's not difficult, but little things that you wouldn't get to do anywhere else, I suppose.
Would you say, and I'm asking this, sometimes you get the impression that sealers are seen sort of as the royalty of the, you know, the manly group of the island. Would you say that is a true impression?
That's an interesting question. I think probably yes. I mean, it sounds probably very arrogant to say that.
No.
I definitely don't mean it in an arrogant way, but I do think in terms of the workload, it's definitely the hardest work, it's the hardest job in terms of the traditional sort of fields that people are employed in on the island, and that's sort of what drives that. I think everyone sort of probably has a little bit of pride in the sense of, you know, they weren't just a bird, or they weren't just you know, something else. I mean, I'm not saying that the others don't work hard. Obviously, everyone has their responsibilities, and
because it's, and you're away from base a lot. Does that affect team relationships? The fact that sealers are away from base and medcasters, for instance, are at base.
I think it can, and it does sometimes. I don't recall sort of in our year it ever being too much of a problem. It was occasionally, it was a bit of a contentious issue when you have like skivvy days, for instance, when the base needs to be cleaned and we're not there, you know, to help. And, you know, you get a little bit of grumpiness, okay, about that. In general, I think, and I don't think this is necessarily the case for every team, but we had a fairly understanding team in the sense where, with other things like your cooking duties, for instance, we had sort of a turntable thing, which, you know, you've got your turn, and if you were not there because of work, then you were literally just skipped. You didn't have to make up for it later if you happened to be there on the day. Because, and I think the understanding was very much there, well, if you're not, you're cooking anyway, you're cleaning anyway, you sort of, you know, you've got these sort of responsibilities all the time. So it's not that you're sort of skimping on working, it's just you're not there. So I don't think it created too much of a tension, but I can see that in other teams, I think it has created more tension than in ours at least.
Yeah. Apart from Peter, the other Medkasi sometimes go for walkabouts in your team?
very few.
Okay.
Very, very few. Yeah.
Why would you say that?
I think, I don't really know, but I think the impression that field workers tend to have of base personnel, and I think sometimes it's justified, is that they get comfortable. Yeah, you know, it's difficult to... The first walk for anyone to a hut or somewhere else on the island is quite hard, and it's, you know, you need to get used to the terrain and whatever, and if you don't have to, then it's, you know, they tend to delay it. You know, they're always planning, I've got to do around island. And next thing you know, it's the end of the year, and they've been to one hut for one night, you know, and that's sort of what their experiences are like. And you know, so I think it's partially it's sort of a comfort thing, you know, where you don't, and it probably is slightly scary, depending on your background too. I mean, if you suddenly have to deal with seals on beaches and things, and you've never worked with animals or things before, you come from a completely different background, it may not be something you want to do or want to be involved with or want to run the risk of, you know. So,
what makes the work easy?
I guess the place and the experience. I mean, there's it's just that the place is different enough and unique enough that you want to work there, and it sort of, it makes you, the idea of something new can happen any day when you're walking out, that sort of drives a lot of it, you know, you sort of, because, you know, you always sort of, I mean, it was always sort of a thing when you walk out, you think, oh, I hope I'm going to see this today, you know, you hope you're going to see killer whales attacking a seal on the beach, or, you know, you sort of, there's always this sort of thing of, oh, this could happen, or that could happen, and that makes it a lot easier to, you know, because you're sort of expecting things to happen around the corner all the time.
What makes it difficult?
Well, number one, the weather. Mm-hmm. The weather is always a problem. I think, to a certain extent, for me, at least at the year that I was there, what made the program a bit more difficult was the fact that I didn't have a background in the program, and I wasn't aware. It was difficult to get an overall view of, well, this is where this data is going to, and this is how it's all going to fit together. You know, I got a rough idea, but, you know, sort of, I have different sections of the program, this is what needs to get done, but you don't necessarily have a feel for, well, this is what's going to come out of it, and this is how it all fits together. And if you don't know that, it's sort of, you know, I think in your mind you start questioning, well, you know, do I really have to do this? You know, it's sort of, maybe I don't really want to do this. This isn't the most fun thing to do. And that sort of makes it a bit more difficult, sort of from a mental point of view at least.
What did you miss on the island?
I'm trying to think. Obviously, family and friends. You miss family and friends. Everyone does, I'm sure. At least 90% of people do. you get the odd individual who really doesn't miss anyone. Some foods, I suppose. No, I didn't have any major hang-ups with food. Some fresh fruits, I definitely miss.
Now, later that year, you said a construction team came down. How did that change things?
It definitely, I think it put a lot of strain, or quite a lot of strain at least, on sort of the team dynamics to a certain extent. Because what happens is you sort of go through the winter as the team, everyone's happy, everyone gets along, everyone's positive, and then the sort of this construction voyage looms a little bit, and I don't think many people really were looking forward to it that much. Maybe one or two individuals were looking forward to the extra company, but for a lot of people, it's just more of a disruption. You know, now suddenly you have to share the limited space. I mean, at that point, none of the construction personnel live in the new base yet, so base was really full suddenly. You're sort of losing your home to a certain extent. Yeah. You're getting sort of overpowered in a way. And I think that sort of influenced the team dynamics was, you know, you sort of lose a bit of contact in a way with other team members where, you know, you're busy in the field, so you know, you come back where you used to come back and have a dinner around the table with the whole team and catch up a bit with what everyone's been doing. That's suddenly gone. You sort of come back and the kitchen's full of people. You sit and chat to one or two people and, you know, half your team you never actually even see anymore. So, you know, and so that's sort of that period. And then once they leave, we had this sort of situation where we had one or two people who made really good friends or sort of even boyfriends with the construction personnel. And who were then suddenly very sort of down and a little bit upset that the ship had left. And of course, the other end of the scale was true for many of us, where you know we couldn't be happier. The ship is gone, and suddenly you know we've got the place back. And I think that in itself just created a bit of tension because now suddenly you've got people who are moping a little bit, and people who are wanting to have a big party. and that didn't mesh very well. That created some tension.
How many construction crew were there?
I don't remember exact numbers, but we were definitely probably 30, 40. Yeah.
That's quite a few. Yeah. Did the guys stay there while they were busy constructing, or did it come back?
No, it came back. They left a helicopter, so we had helicopter personnel for that takeover and the construction, and the ship left and came back to pick up. Yeah.
And pick up just the construction crew.
Yeah.
And then the ship came again to pick you off the island.
Yeah.
Okay. But at that stage, they were so busy with the outside construction of the new base?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they were still building the shell, essentially.
Did you notice any effect on the animal life around base?
Not very specifically. I mean, where the sort of new base is situated, at least from our point of view, from the seals' point of view, it's a bit further away from boulders where you've got more seals. And, you know, I didn't specifically recall any major... Yeah, I mean, the increased helicopter flights, sure. Every time a helicopter takes off, you see animals sort of looking up and getting all freaked out a little bit, yeah. So.
Okay. What did you do for relaxation? When you had your time off,
I read quite a lot. Read many books. We had a fairly, especially the start of the year, sort of prior to construction, we had a fairly good social atmosphere in the team. Where you know, if you had time off, you'd go sit down in the bar, start a game of pool, have a few drinks. You know, and it's just. So most of your sort of time off, you'd either be sort of hanging around, just socializing a bit. Whereas I think it sort of changed to sort of later in the year, also partly because you're running out of time, sort of off time, you tended to use to maybe go and explore the interior a bit. Or, you know, if you have a day where you don't really have much responsibility, then you take off and go up to Cathedral and have a look around. Or, you know, those sorts of things.
The presence of the construction crew have anything to do with trying to be away from base more?
Yes, with me, yeah. Okay. I don't know, not with everyone, obviously, but absolutely, yeah. It's definitely not, it's kind of like a takeover where it's all just crammed and busy and, you know, it's just more fun.
Shower.
Exactly, yeah, it's more fun to just go to it, you know. So.
It sounds like you had a very mixed team, gender-wise, culture-wise. How did that work out?
Pretty good, I think, in general. Especially that sort of first half, there were really never, I can't recall there ever being any sort of racial issues or gender issues or, you know. I think later on, I mean, there were, I still don't even know the full story. I mean, there were sort of allegations of one of the white team members having made some sort of racist remark at some point, and this mm-hmm. created some unhappiness amongst the other people in the team. And, you know, so at some point it definitely did become a bit of an issue. I think they sorted out. It never sort of became
a
very big thing, yeah.
So you feel you've learned something from being in such a close environment with, or were you exposed to it before?
I was exposed to quite, I mean, sort of especially having been at WITS for my master's, where it's a far more mixed sort of environment where everyone gets along. So I don't feel like it was totally a new sort of thing for me.
Do you think it was for some of the people on the team?
To a certain extent, yes. I think, and for someone like Pati, for instance, who hardly ever even left Venda, who was now suddenly in a group of people from all over, different experiences, different places. So I think, you know, definitely it must have been a slightly new experience. And the same goes from sort of, yeah, I think a lot of the other people like Jan and Anke and Shorty, they'd been on other expeditions before, so I don't think it was really a new thing for them. What was slightly different probably in our team was the ratio of women to men was, I mean, we had more women than men. We had 7 women and 6 men.
Oh, really?
So, which I think is the only team on record so far.
No, I
to have been sort of, yeah, so.
Different ratio.
So I think, you know, just sort of in terms of numbers, it was a little bit more mixed than other teams are sort of used to. Mm-hmm. And I think for like someone like Jan, for instance, who'd mm-hmm. been on many other teams where it was mostly males and, mm-hmm. and only 2 or 3 women in the team. It was sudden, you know, I think it was a slightly different team for him to be a part of.
Yeah. Did he meet his wife on such an expedition?
No, I think they met, I mean, both of them had done sort of different expeditions, but I think they met at an Antarctic Braai or something in Pretoria.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was because of their involvement that they met, but it wasn't on an island.
No. Last few questions, coming back. What was it like when the ship came take over?
A little bit of excitement, a little bit of sort of apprehension, I suppose, mm-hmm. Because you know it's going to be busy and it's going to be a lot of people and you don't want that, but you're sort of excited to go back as well, because towards the end, I mean, there's definitely that bit of sadness about, oh, you wanted to still do this and that, but there's also the excitement of you're going back soon, so it's a bit of a mixed feeling.
And when you're back in South Africa, what did you miss about Ireland?
The lack of traffic was the... And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that I miss about Ireland. I mean, obviously the general environment, the work that you do, the animals, you know, you miss all of that. But in terms of a lifestyle, the uncomplicated lifestyle, I really, really miss that. And I think still today, you know, you sort of... Every time I'm stuck in traffic, I think, oh, if I was on the island, just, I wouldn't have to deal with this sort of thing, you know. Or you don't have to deal with banks and, you know, insurance and things like that, which, yeah, you know, you sort of have all the time over here. So,
if you had the opportunity, would you go back for another
year? Possibly not at this stage, no. I was very... the original idea, or part of the idea was, I was thinking about going this coming year again, actually. But just from a sort of a career point, I'm trying to get the PhD done now. Okay. And also from a relationship point of view, I'm sort of in a very stable relationship at the moment, which girlfriend probably wouldn't really want me to go for a year. A month or 2 months or something, it's okay.
Yeah.
A year is maybe pushing it a little bit, okay. So yeah, probably not.
She's also involved with the island.
Yes, Natalie.
You've met her. She's also at CIV. Okay. Oh, last thing I wanted to ask, so I'm just looking at my notes here. Midwinter. Did you celebrate midwinter?
Yes, yeah. Big party. We had an old Victorian style theme to it. And we all tried to speak in very high accents, and it was a lot of fun after a while. But yeah, that was sort of, I think those are actually, that's probably the one party where I have some pictures from. Sort of raided the costume cupboard, and everyone had to dress up and come up with a name for themselves, and sort of a title and things. And so that was good.
Did you have like contact with other stations, Southern Nordic stations or Sanai?
We did get messages from all over, yes. Mm. I remember initially still putting up printed out sort of cards and things from different places.
In the year in general, did you have contact with Sanai?
Not a lot that I can recall, no. Mm. We at that point, we sort of the communication was still quite shoddy, so the whole internet setup wasn't as good as it is at the moment. So I remember, we still couldn't, in terms of even work, contacting Martin was sometimes quite a mission because the way I understood it at the time was between the three bases that we sort of shared two uplinks, essentially. And if the other two stations were using the internet, then we couldn't. And, so there was a bit of it wasn't very effective. Definitely not as effective as it is now, at least. Yeah.
Do you know maybe why you didn't have a Maid Marian, or did you just not get around to it?
I think it was something that we were sort of probably thinking of having later in the year, and then, construction probably played a big role in terms of, one, delaying it, and then secondly, I think after construction, there was, because of the sort of bit of an unease, I don't think people, it just didn't seem to be very up for it, so it just never, there was definitely something that at the start we were all saying, it's going to, have a big party, and then it just never really happened,
Thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome.